Hello, welcome to the Livestreams Carawarra podcast. We're delighted to have you join us. We invite you to sit back, relax, and listen to our latest episode. Thanks for joining.
Well, thank you for that welcome. The passage that I've been asked to look at tonight is from Luke chapter 10, 25 to 37, which is about our commitment to one of the greatest commandments: love your neighbour as you love yourself. So let's read through that passage, and it's the story of the Good Samaritan. Most of us would know that phrase, even if we have never heard the story. It's a parable that Jesus told, and there's a reason behind why he told it, which we'll find as we read through here. Just then, a religion scholar stood up with a question to test Jesus. "Teacher, what do I need to do to get eternal life?" He answered, "To get eternal life." Jesus answered, "What's written in God's law? How do you interpret it?" He said, "That you love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and muscle and intelligence, and that you love your neighbor as well as you do yourself." "Good answer," said Jesus. "Do it and you'll live." Looking for a loophole, he asked, "And just how would you define neighbor?" Jesus answered by telling a story. There was once a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. And Jericho was down a fairly steep road from Jerusalem, a lot of hills and a very windy road, and well known for its robbers and bandits. So there was once a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. On the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes, beat him up, and went off, leaving him half dead. Luckily, a priest was on his way down the same road. But when he saw him, he angled across to the other side. Then a Levite religious man showed up. He also avoided the injured man. A Samaritan traveling the road came on him. When he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfecting and bandaging his wounds. Then he lifted him onto his donkey, led him to an inn, and made him comfortable. In the morning, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take good care of him. If it costs any more, put it on my bill. I'll pay you on my way back." What do you think? Which of the three became a neighbor to the man attacked by robbers? "The one who treated him kindly," the religion scholar responded. Jesus said, "Go and do the same." Now, to help us hear this story as Jesus intended it to be heard, we need a little historical background, and particularly in relation to the main characters. Firstly, the religion scholar who asked the question. Who was this guy who wanted to test Jesus' understanding of the law? Well, this man belonged to a category of people who studied, interpreted, and taught the Mosaic law, which, of course, for Jews was the final authority for life. And not only the words of Moses, but all the extra laws that they had accumulated around it over the years. And there's 2 different Greek words used to describe this group of people. It's the same group of people. Sometimes in one gospel they might use one word, in another gospel use the other. But if you read the King James, they'll be described as a lawyer and a scribe. They're the same people, really. And if you read an NIV, it'll call one the expert in the law, and the other one the teacher of the law. And so we have this category of people. seems that most of the lawyers belonged to the sect of the Pharisees. Now, the Pharisees was, they're hard to define. They're either a sect, they're called a sect of the Jewish religion. Some people define them as a social group. Some of them define them as a political group. But they were people who prided themselves on how perfectly they kept the Mosaic Law. The Mosaic Law had 613 commandments, but over the years, there was another group of sayings called the Oral Law, the Mishnah, which had lots and 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 lots of extra little laws. For instance, Mosaic Law tells them to keep the Sabbath holy. And one of the major things there was you don't work on the Sabbath. Well, what's work? They had defined 39 categories of work, so you'd know whether you were working on the Sabbath or not. One of the things was about going on a journey, because that's work. And so they had to define what a Sabbath day's journey was, 200 cubits, is about 2,000 cubits rather, which is sort of about 3,000 feet. And I worked that, it was about 2 miles. How many kilometres is that? Just over a kilometre. No, that's not right, about 3 kilometres. So this is a Sabbath day's journey. You weren't allowed to walk any further than that on the Sabbath day, or you violated the keep the Sabbath holy. So they had millions of these laws that they had put together. So here we have a lawyer. Now, there's two other things probably that seemed to me to be relevant. Sometimes we think the Pharisees were the same people as the priests, but they weren't. Some of the priests were Pharisees, some of the Pharisees were priests, but they're actually two quite separate groups. And the second thing about Pharisees was that almsgiving to the poor was the Pharisees' way of loving their neighbour. So they were well known for their generosity to the poor. So here we have a lawyer, and for a lawyer, debating questions like this one, it's one of their favoured pastimes. And this question was probably not an antagonistic one, but certainly a probing one, maybe hoping to expose Jesus as an unqualified rabbi. I mean, he was known as a rabbi, he had disciples, and so he was accepted as a teacher. But, you know, was he rigidy-didge? Well, this lawyer is going to test him. So that's the first character we have. Secondly, there was the priest. Well, we put the priest and the Levite together because the Levites were people whose job was to assist the priest in their prescribed duties. The priests more than likely lived down in Jericho because it was known as a city of priests. That's where a lot of them lived, and they'd come up to Jerusalem to do their duties when they were assigned those duties. And so these two represented the priestly types. They probably were not Pharisees. They were much more likely to be Sadducees. It's a different sect. And they weren't... the Sadducees believed in keeping the law of Moses, but not all the oral law with its multiple interpretations. And so they weren't as law-oriented as the scribes and Pharisees. And they were often corrupt. And they were very much looked down on by the lawyers and scribes. And then thirdly, we have a Samaritan. Well, historically, the Samaritans, who were the neighbours, if you can see on the map there, Judea and Galilee was Jewish, but Samaria in the middle, where the Samaritans lived, they were a different people. They were crossbred Jews, the mongrel Jews, and they worshipped Yahweh according to their own rules, and they were hated by the Jews, and especially religious Jews like this lawyer, very much hated by them. And John tells us very clearly the reality of the day. Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. We read that in the story about Jesus and the woman at the well. Samaritan woman at the well. So the lawyer's purpose in asking the question, he says, how do you define neighbour? You know, this is, well, he's a lawyer. You can tell he's a lawyer, can't you? How do you define this word? His purpose is to justify himself. He knows what the law says about loving your neighbour. And so, being a lawyer, he's got a very careful definition of neighbour. So he knows who he has to love without violating the law. Of course, it has to be another Jew. That's basic to their understanding of who a neighbour was. And Jesus' purpose in telling the parable as he responds to this question, how do you define a neighbour? His purpose is to force a response from this self-righteous man. And his punchline, like in a well-told joke, will catch the man off guard and cause him to go, oof, you know, like he just had a punch to the solar plexus. And so the parable sets the lawyer up for a challenge to his righteousness. So let's have a look at the parable again. The traveler is beaten up and in need of help. And first a priest comes by. No caring response from him. But the lawyer is thinking, who would expect anything else from a priest anyhow? And then the Levite. Again, he offers no help. And again, Jesus' story confirms the lawyer's own self-righteous thinking. And by now, he's congratulating himself and smugly guessing that the next person will be a Pharisee who will stop and minister to the man. But no, it's a hated Samaritan. And it's the Samaritan who fully obeys the law of God, which the lawyer himself likes to wriggle around. And then Jesus asks him the right question. Not who is my neighbor, but who became a neighbor to the needy man. It's interesting to see the lawyer's response because he knows he's been exposed by that answer, but he can't even bring himself to say the Samaritan. He says, oh, the one who helped him. Not going to talk about a Samaritan. So Jesus says, you go and do the same. You go and be a neighbor to anyone in need. But of course, that word was not just for him, but for us. And incidentally, what did the law say to a situation such as this? Well, if we go back and have a look at the law of Moses, in every point, the law taught one's responsibility to one's fellow man, not just to one's friends, but even to enemies and strangers. And in Exodus 23, we read this. If you come upon your enemy, all right? If you come upon your enemy's ox or donkey that has strayed away, take it back to its owner. If you see that the donkey of someone who hates you has collapsed under its load, do not walk by. Instead, stop and help the one who hates you. Doesn't sound too far from what Jesus told us. Love your enemies. Most of us probably want to be a bit like the lawyer and wriggle around that one just as much as possible. Loving your enemy is not always the easiest thing that Jesus taught us. And then in Leviticus 19, when an alien lives with you in your land, do not mistreat him. The alien living with you must be treated as one of your native born. Love him as yourself, for you were aliens in Egypt. So that was the law, but over the centuries, the Jews, wanting to avoid the more challenging parts of the law, had narrowed down these obligations by their myriad of rules and interpretations that they had accumulated around the law of Moses. So what does all that mean for us today? Well, before we get into that, let's look at a couple more related things. You'll recall from our introduction to Luke, when was it, back in February, did you say? That one of Luke's specific focuses is Jesus' ministry to social outcasts. You probably already came across that back in chapter 7 as you've been going through, where Luke relates the story of the immoral woman who anoints Jesus' feet. And Luke also mentions publicans and Samaritans and even the prodigal son being treated with kindness and compassion by Jesus. So, no surprise that here he tells a story favorable to a Samaritan. Except for one thing. Because a few verses earlier we find this story. When it came close to the time for his ascension, Jesus gathered up his courage and steeled himself for the journey to Jerusalem. He knew the cross lay ahead of him. He sent messengers on ahead. They came to a Samaritan village to make arrangements for his hospitality. But when the Samaritans learned that his destination was Jerusalem, they refused hospitality. When the disciples, James and John, learned of it, they said, "Master, do you want us to call a bolt of lightning down out of the sky and incinerate them?" Jesus turned on them, "Of course not." And they traveled on to another village. Now, Jesus no doubt feels this rejection by the Samaritans, but unlike James and John, he doesn't take it personally. And he doesn't use this experience to blacklist all Samaritans. He came to save the world. And it makes no difference to him whether they like him or hate him. He loves them. And then there's an interesting passage in the Jewish law which relates to the sabbatical year. Sabbatical year, every seventh year under the Jewish law was to be a year of release. Release for every Jewish debt. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? I mean, if you went to the bank every 7 years and they wrote your debts off, that would be great. Well, under the Jewish law, your debts had to be released every 7 years. And not only that, if you had sold yourself, if you were so in debt and had no way of recouping that debt, you would sell yourself as a servant or a slave to another Jewish person. But at the end of the seventh year, they had to release you. So it was the year of release. And Deuteronomy chapter 15 deals with this. And it's really interesting to walk through this passage. I'll just look at three verses. In verse 4, "But there will be no poor among you, for the Lord will bless you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance to possess." Nevertheless, as we read on to verse 7, it says this, "But if among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother." You need to read this whole chapter to get it fully in context, of course. But then we go on to verse 15. It says, "For there will never cease to be poor in your land, in the land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy and to the poor in your land." So here's the narrative. If you obey me, I will bless you so much there will never be poor in the land. But if someone does become poor, be careful that your attitude is merciful. And don't just say, "Oh, well, he deserves that. Look at the way he lives." And the reason, because realistically, given sinful human nature, there will always be poor among you. The first time I sort of read that chapter through, thinking about it as I went, I thought, this is amazing. There'll never be poor. But if there are, be careful, because there'll always be poor. It's an interesting progression as you go through this chapter. All right, well, let's come now to some application. And the first one is this. God is invested. Oh, my goodness. Sorry about that. God is invested in the poor. And he shows particular concern and compassion for them. A pastor said to me just this week, "I've been reading the Psalms recently again and cannot get away from the concern that God shows for the poor. Seems like he warns and threatens the rest of us about our behavior, but he only ever shows compassion to the poor." And of course, that's not just in the Psalms. For example, right through Proverbs, we meet passages like this frequently in Proverbs. He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done. I thought that is a fascinating word. If you're kind to the poor, you lend to the Lord. You don't give it to him, you just lend it to him. God will repay you. God will reward you for what you've done. Interesting word, lends. And then Proverbs 11:25, and I think this is a really beautiful verse, and one year, I think, in our church, we took it for our motto for the year. A generous man will prosper. Or woman. Sorry, that's the NIV. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. And then in Luke 4:18, of course, we find Jesus taking the mandate of Isaiah 61 for himself. The Spirit of Yahweh. Is that what happened? The Spirit of Yahweh is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. And I think that's the mandate for us as his followers. I don't think Jesus was just saying this is about him. It's about his ministry, and we now are the hands and feet of Jesus. So this is the mandate for us. And if you say to me, as well of us might think, but none of my neighbors are poor, it may be like the lawyer in the story, we're defining neighbor just a bit too tightly. So that's the first thing. God is invested in the poor. The second thing is, don't stereotype people. You know, I thought as I read this passage, these few chapters around chapter 10, I think the lesson that the Spirit of God is teaching us from this close proximity of these two stories about the Samaritans that Luke has, one in chapter 9 where Jesus is not even allowed to stay in a Samaritan village, and then in chapter 10 as he tells us the parable of the Good Samaritan, I think that that the Lord's teaching us something from that. Don't stereotype people. To put it another way, don't take offense at a group of people over any particular incident. And I say that because you might have noticed, as I have, that we Aussies are terribly racist. Probably the strongest evidence of that is how vehemently we react to that assertion. Well, I've found most people do quite strongly. I'll tell you a story about a friend who now is much older and much wiser than when this story comes from. In fact, she's now a Christian counselor in a ministry to homeless and other disadvantaged people. But one day, she and her family were slagging off at how much money was being spent on Aboriginal people in WA. All the waste, all the financial benefits only available to black people, all their false claims of disadvantage, etc., etc., etc. After a while, I gently said, we're not racist, are we? Which was met with very strong affirmations. No, we're just being realistic. Well, a little later in the day, some mention was made of the disadvantages that women suffered from in our society. You know, wage discrimination, the glass ceiling, all that kind of stuff. So I decided to play devil's advocate and said, I don't think that's as real as all the feminists make out. It's all really just a matter of perception. If someone's told often enough they're disadvantaged, then they start to believe it. Well, that set the cat among the pigeons, I can tell you. And I got harangued for the next 20 minutes on feminine disadvantage, with the clincher being, you're not a woman, so how would you know? So I waited until the temperature in the room had come down a bit, and then I said to them, you're right, I'm not a woman, so how would I know? I don't really understand feminine disadvantage. But if I can just take you back to an earlier conversation, I'd like to point out that you're not a black person, so you don't really understand black disadvantage. In fact, I said most of the earlier discussion was quite racist. You see, to a large extent, it is all a matter of perception. For example, a senior Aboriginal tribal elder and pastor who's one of my closest friends has many different perceptions about black issues from the non-Christian members of his tribal group. And, of course, stereotyping is all about perception rather than reality. Build relationship and stereotyping disappears. Build relationship and stereotyping disappears. Okay, so the third question is, the third point is, who is my neighbor? And Jesus makes it clear, who am I willing to be a neighbor to is the real question. And I think our preferred neighbors are people like us. In fact, we often try to protect our neighborhoods from people who are not like us. And I guess the current rejection by the city of Perth of a new location for Rua's Home for the Homeless, that's one of the Catholic ministries in the city, wanting to move into a new venue, being rejected by the city council because they don't fit in that neighborhood. You know, they're not the right kind of neighbors. So their Home for the Homeless has been, at this stage, they've told you can't have that property, you can't put people there because we don't want those kind of people in our neighborhood. But Jesus' parable quite specifically shows us a different way, his way. That's becoming a neighbor to those unlike us, even hostile to us. Showing his love, which is defined, I think, in our most fundamental understanding of the gospel. John tells us in his gospel, this is how much God loved the world. He gave his son, his one and only son. And this is why, so that no one need be destroyed. By believing in him, anyone can have a whole and lasting life. God didn't go to all the trouble of sending his son merely to point an accusing finger, telling the world how bad it was. He came to help, to put the world right again. And I think that's a challenging statement for us, for the church, to hear. We've been really good at pointing an accusing finger, telling the world how bad it was. If we want any credibility at all, I think we need to realize that our call is rather to help, to put the world right again. And then, application number four, what does it mean to love our neighbor? Well, I think Jesus beautifully clarifies that in this parable without ever mentioning the word love. And the Apostle John puts it quite clearly as well, and he does mention the word love. He says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. So one final observation. You haven't got to Luke 17 yet. Obviously, you're going to get there pretty soon, seeing we're in chapter 10. But many of you perhaps will know the story about 10 lepers who met Jesus and were cleansed by his word. And only one returned to thank him, and that man was a Samaritan. But did you notice this? There were 10 lepers, 9 Jews, and a Samaritan. Now remember, Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. So this is interesting, because if you're both in the same boat, even strong social norms can be broken. Because the ties that bind us together, are often stronger than the rules that separate us. Well, it's that commonality of the lepers in their need which reminds me of an old description of the gospel. It's one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And so as we go from here today, let's remind ourselves that we're all beggars. But by the grace of God, He's brought us to the living bread. And it's our privilege and our responsibility to share our bread with the other beggars and to love our neighbours as God loves us. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed our latest episode. Tune in next week for another Life Streams Carawarra message. Have a blessed week.